All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce Castle presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Thank you. Before we begin, I just point out that the clerk's tables have been moved forward in preparation for the bench growing to 9. Good morning. I'm Chief Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Lance. We're here in the matter of William R. Young, and has a docket number of 09-1621. Counsel of the parties, please note your appearance for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Zachary Stoltz of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick for the appellant William Young. With me at counsel's table, Robert Chisholm, also of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Angela Green, Board Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Eric K. Shinseki. With me at counsel's table is Ed Cassidy, Deputy Assistant General Counsel.
Thank you very much. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right. You have 10 minutes and you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Mr. Young is entitled to an award of Equal Access to Justice Act fees, and the Secretary agrees. The court should approve the party's September 2011 settlement.
Is that your argument?
Your Honor, I believe it
you
is.
You may rest on your briefs. It's okay. We called the oral argument, so nothing inappropriate with you resting on your briefs. You didn't ask for it. It was asked for by the court. So.
Well, I didn't mean to demean it. I appreciated the brevity of the situation.
We do have a settlement, and we ask the court to approve it.
Well, you have a contract. Under the auspices of the jurisdiction of this court. So the question then becomes whether or not this court has jurisdiction over what it is you all agreed to. Isn't that really the issue?
Yes, Your Honor. And we do believe that the court has jurisdiction to approve the settlement. The court exercised its jurisdiction.
Well, let me jump in. I think one of the underlying issues that you might have picked up from the order that went out from the court is there was some concern as to whether the court had jurisdiction to effect to address the issue of a referral versus a remand. So I don't know if you want to address that or if one of the judges wants to address that.
I'm happy to. I would say that the court.
Do you think this is funny?
I do not.
Because your case stands on this.
I do not at all. I believe that to Chief Judge Castle's question. That the court acted correctly, the court exercised its jurisdiction, the court properly under the statute that it articulates its jurisdiction does contemplate modification. The court did modify it. It granted Mr. Young relief. And so I do believe that the court did exercise its jurisdiction correctly and that the court does have jurisdiction.
You cited a number of, and I believe the Secretary is in agreement with you, you cited a number of panel cases where the court has exercised its jurisdiction in the past. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, over the referral.
Over the referral versus the remand, yes.
Yes, Your Honor. For example, right. Mamlin-Con, Godfrey.
And at the time, the jurisdiction was focused on whether or not we even had to have a final board decision. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And since then, the Supreme Court has pointed out that the section dealing with 120 days is actually in a procedural section and not the jurisdictional section. And in fact, the finality requirement is in that section, is it not? So there could be an argument that a final board decision isn't even a requirement. Because the actual jurisdictional provisions of the statute simply say exclusive jurisdiction over board decisions.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And in fact, the referral, if you don't go that far and you say we did have a final board decision, in this case affecting benefits, which is what you said in your brief, then the argument was made to the court that the referral was inappropriate because the matter that was being referred was part of the very claim that the appellant had. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And this court has jurisdiction over the issues associated with the claim. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Well, we now have a view of the facts, but explain to me why this is not an interlocutory appeal. If, in fact, the matters referred back to the RO, the RO is working the case, the appeal at this level, theoretically, under your theory, would continue to percolate. And the RO might reach a decision that would nullify, basically, the appeal, if you will, and this court would still be working on the appeal, or vice versa. This court could reach a decision with the RO still working on the case on the referral, right? So the bottom line is you can't be two places at one time. And the concern that I have is this is an interlocutory appeal because there is no preclusive effect and no finality. Both sides agree that there is no preclusive effect. So why is this not an interlocutory appeal?
Your Honor, I believe that the preclusive effect in this case is the fact that their referral was never really an award, or it really granted no relief. The referral was improper precisely because it does prejudice the client, the veteran, Mr. Young, in that when it goes down, while there is no preclusive effect of some downstream issues, for example, the award of service connection, the award of the proper compensation, there is a preclusive effect of the fact that Mr. Young would be awarded given certainly a different docket number. It would certainly cost him time. As was recognized in the Sandstrom case, the cost of time does cost a veteran interest on possible benefits earned. And so I do believe that because referral does not award any relief to the veteran, it is in fact a final decision of the Board of Veterans Appeals, and it's not really an interlocutory appeal.
What happened in this case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What happened? As a matter of fact, in this case.
As a matter of fact, in this case, a lot of things happened.
I'm talking about when it went down to the RO.
On the referral time, once the Board of Veterans Appeals in its 2009 decision affirmed the denial of...
I know, it went back to the RO, didn't it?
It did.
Okay, what happened at the RO?
At the RO denied service connection for generalized anxiety disorder, and it treated the effective date as January 2009.
For PTSD.
For generalized anxiety disorder, Your Honor.
So it denied service connection for anxiety disorder?
The first time around, yes, Your Honor.
I'm talking about when it was sent back.
When it was sent back, the referral, mm-hmm. After the referral, it went back to the RO. The RO denied service connection for generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It treated the effective date as January 2009. And then once the court modified the board's decision, the modified case went back to the Board of Veterans Appeals. This time, the Board of Veterans Appeals did award service connection.
Back to the board or back to the RO?
The board. The board awarded service connection, and then it, in turn, sent it back to the RO for the RO to determine compensation.
Okay, so in this case, what is left to give the veteran?
Equal Access to Justice Act fees.
Well, that, okay. That presumes that the court had authority to modify the board decision. In other words, a referral or a remand made no difference here, did it, as a practical matter? Other than EJIA fees. I'm talking about the veteran.
With your permission, Your Honor, ma'am.
Sure.
Your Honor, as my co-counsel pointed out, the effective date, after the referral, the effective date was erroneous, as well as the denial of service connection at the time. So had the referral stood, Mr. Young would have been denied, again, the many years of the process. He would have had to go back.
Why? It went back to the RO, and he got the relief he sought, correct?
Your Honor, he did not get the relief he sought until this court modified the board's original decision.
Well, it just, all the court did, I shouldn't say all the court did. The effect of the board decision was to send the matter back to the regional office, whether it be referral or remand, correct? Let's assume this wasn't modified.
Okay.
What would the effect of a referral be?
The effect of the referral would be, and in this case was, that it went back to the Board of Veterans' Appeal, or it went back to the RO, I'm sorry.
Right. Right.
It went back to the RO. The RO denied service connection, and the RO treated the effective date as 2009, when after this court correctly came in and modified the board's decision and correctly made sure that it was remanded. Once it was remanded, generalized anxiety disorder, it was granted service connection, and it was awarded an effective date of 2003, stemming from the original rating decision coming on the way up. Did that?
I understand your answer.
Okay.
So if it had remained a referral, the RO would have made his decision. You could have appealed it to the board, and your effective date could have been handled. The board could have said, oh, gee, the RO took our referral to be a new claim. Upon reviewing it, it really wasn't a new claim. It was part of the original claim, and therefore the effective date would be earlier. They could have done that. You could have gotten your remedy over the time.
Yes, Your Honor.
But in fact, when you get a referral versus a remand, you do not get the statutory expedited review that is required. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So one difference is, statutorily, your client would have a right to an expedited review if it were remanded and it's put in the queue if it's a referral. The second thing that happens as a practical matter is, on a referral, it's considered to be a new claim, and therefore the effective date is associated with the referral. And so if nothing is done, which could have happened, nothing were done, you could ultimately get your remedy. You probably would have gone, which what you did go through with, your client did go through with, is get an effective date associated with the referral instead of an effective date associated potentially with the original claim. And you would have lost out on the expedited review.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was that a question?
Yes. You just said yes.
The other thing to expand upon it a little bit, the rating is still on appeal in this case.
Let me ask another question. There's a difference between jurisdiction and when you go ahead and exercise the jurisdiction. If the court had not changed that, you ultimately could have gotten your remedy. The question is whether the court had the authority to do it. And both you, Secretary, panel cases have stated that this court or have exercised that particular authority. You and your opposing counsel state the court has it. And the statute doesn't have any limitation with regard to it. And in fact, referral versus remand is a final decision, because once you get a referral, unless corrected by the court, you don't get the expedited review. And by the time the board renders its decision and even corrects the effective date, that issue is gone and can never be addressed.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's what you wanted to say?
I would also add...
And forgive me, my apologies, because I did have a laugh, and I know you reacted to that, so just to put on the record, I know that was not your own. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, let's get back to why this is not an interlocutory appeal.
Okay, Your Honor.
You don't have a final decision. You have no preclusive effect. You haven't met the requirements of 38 U.S.C. 7266. And you're telling me it's not an interlocutory appeal.
Your Honor, I would say that we do have a final decision. I believe that that is the most important thing to think about as to why this is not an interlocutory appeal. The final decision is the referral. Once this claim, and it's not really an issue that was referred, it was a claim. Once it was referred, that became a final and adverse action on the part of the Board of Veterans' Appeals. It was adverse, precisely as Chief Judge Castle pointed out, because he lost his rights to expedited proceedings. Once a new Form 9 is filed, just as a practical matter below, he's going to be assigned a new docket number. Once that new docket number gets assigned, he's going to go right to the back of the line.
Counselor, aren't matters similar to this handled on a routine basis with a request for extraordinary relief from this court? You're implying that that was his only remedy. Well, it seems to me, under the circumstances, had you or your client made application to the court for extraordinary relief to have the docket number problem re-merged, if you will, or fixed somehow, the court would have then considered your view on this under a writ of extraordinary relief.
If I could have a second, Your Honor.
Sure.
Your Honor, the referral would not entitle Mr. Young to a writ in this case. I don't believe that a writ would be the proper remedy here.
Well, before you go that far, it's a deeper question. You have a statutory right to a remand versus a referral. You have a statutory right to expedition processing. And third, if we could exercise mandamus, it means we have jurisdiction, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, the application could have been made by your client.
The application for mandamus, Your Honor?
For extraordinary relief, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we would have gotten to the issue of jurisdiction, and then we would have gotten to the issue of propriety of granting such a request. But we didn't. Okay. So.
Well, with due respect, we did get to the propriety of granting the request.
This court's case law as well, Godfrey Malincon, as well as the regulations cited in the pleadings, 20.714A2 and 19.9, do state that under VA regulations and under this court's case law, the appropriate action in this case was a remand. And again, once it was referred, we did have a final decision that the court properly exercised its jurisdiction over. And we did eventually, after it made its way through the court process, Mr. Young did get the relief that he sought, except for just in the interest of full disclosure.
Do you have 19.9 there?
I do.
Now, I'm referring it through Godfrey, but does it indicate that remands are mandatory when the board determines further development is essential?
If I could have a second, Your Honor?
You certainly may.
Thank you. It does say shall, Your Honor.
So if the board made a mistake with regard to remand, you wouldn't get the benefit of the regulation. If the board made a mistake with regard to the remand versus referral, you wouldn't get the benefit of the statute, and none of those could be reviewed by this court if it wasn't reviewed in a final board decision, which is what you had. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honors, if there are no further questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Angela Green for the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and with me at Council table is David Cassidy, Deputy Assistant General Counsel. The Secretary's position is that in this case, the only action that remains to be taken is to rule on the joint motion to dismiss that was submitted by the parties in September. The reason being that there remains no case or controversy with regard to the EJIA matters as the parties have entered into a joint stipulated agreement, which would include indication that both parties are satisfied that the predicate findings, including prevailing party status, have been satisfied. Although the court's September 23rd order raised several questions to be addressed, which the Secretary has endeavored to respond to in its brief, and certainly will do so today, we did want to be clear that we feel that many of those issues pertain to the merits of the case, in which we're all aware a mandate has issued, and therefore, because the mandate has issued, the case is final, and the veteran has also received the benefit, many of these issues need not be reached in disposing of the EJIA case here. With all of that said, moving on to the issues that the court did in fact raise, the court was concerned whether or not it had the authority to review a board referral. And the Secretary's position is that ordinarily a board determination to refer is not a final decision and is not appealable standing alone. However, we don't look at board referrals in a vacuum. We have to consider the unique facts and circumstances of each case. And in this particular case, What we had is in the court's memorandum decision in June 2010, the court cited Clemens and indicated that Clemens was applicable. In addition, we had the denial of the claim for service-connected benefits related to post-traumatic stress disorder. Because of that final denial on the PTSD claim, which under Clemens is part and parcel of the same claim, that gives the court the jurisdictional hook, if you will, to be able to review the referral by the board of the anxiety disorder claim.
So whereas your opposing counsel might argue a little broader, that would have authority over a standalone referral if such a thing ever existed, the secretary's view is because we had the final board decision here, we had jurisdiction over that particular referral.
That's correct.
Thank you.
So, as Your Honor pointed out, our view is a little bit more narrow, and so it's our position that you have to look to the unique facts and circumstances of each individual case, and simply because the court
had... Just to be clear, we don't have to face this, your opposing counsel's broader argument in this case, because we did have the final board decision.
Correct. Correct. In any case, we will have to look to the unique facts and circumstances of each and every case before before we can determine if the court has before we can determine if it's appropriate for the court to look at the appropriateness of a board referral.
Okay, there's the nub of the problem, isn't it? So what we're going to now face are these interlocutory appeals that are being processed with the court, and you're suggesting that what we need to do in a non-final action is review the propriety of that determination by the board. Doesn't that pose an administrative problem to you or a jurisdictional problem?
Not in this particular case, because you have the final decision.
Okay, but assuming that we were to rule in favor of the appellant in this case, every other appellant would say, my case is different too, right? And so we would take the statute that Congress came up with in terms of a final decision as relates to the claim, and set it aside and say, yeah, we'll look at all these interlocutory appeals as they come up and determine whether or not in this particular case we should just ignore the statutory mandates of Congress.
For the court to review whether or not it's appropriate to look at whether the board referral is reviewable, I don't think is the same thing as... I think that there's a two-tiered analysis. In other words, the court would have to look and determine, is it appropriate for us to even review whether or not the board's referral was appropriate before it actually got into whether the referral was in fact appropriate. And to reach the first tier, I don't think that the court would be doing anything that would be in contravention to the statute.
Well, let's go back to the final decision. I mean, you in your brief indicate that there is no preclusive effect to a referral, right?
Correct.
So how in fact, does this magically change into a final decision?
In this particular case, we have a final denial of the PTSD claim for benefits. And the court, in its memorandum decision, cited Clemens. And the Clemens decision would suggest that when you have two different diagnoses in a case like this one, they all fall within the same claim. Although they're different diagnoses, they are encompassed by the same claim. As a result, you do have a final denial over the claim for benefits, which is the PTSD denial. And by virtue of that denial, in this particular case, the court did have jurisdiction to look at the board referral as to the anxiety disorder issue.
Excuse me. Why is it that, especially after Clemens, that you say the claim was for PTSD?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, too. Why is it that after Clemens, you say that the claim was for PTSD? That's what I thought I heard you say.
The claim was for benefits for service connection associated with PTSD.
But that's not how we define claim, is it, after Clemens? Don't we say in Clemens that the individual does not determine the diagnosis, but we have to read it more generally, and that's exactly what the board did here. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay, so do you retract from your statement that the claim was for PTSD?
No. Well, the claim
we're defining claim now.
The claim was for disability benefits, which the appellant termed in his application to be a diagnosis of PTSD.
Okay. And so what would the law then define the claim to be?
The claim as defined by the law, which would include Clemens, would encompass not just the claim for benefits associated with PTSD, but also, in this case, for example, the generalized anxiety disorder that was raised within the development and adjudication of the claim for benefits for PTSD.
And that is what, and what is it that the court, that the board referred, or that this court said was remanded to the regional office?
The court modified the board's decision to reflect a remand of the generalized anxiety disorder claim.
And why is that not part of the entire claim? All right, as I recall you saying, now tell me if I'm right when I say this, that the jurisdictional hook that the court has is the fact that the court made a decision on PTSD. If in fact the claim was broader, then why is it that the board made a decision on the claim as opposed to part of the claim?
I think that to answer the question, we have to consider the case of Tyruz, in which the court does allow for bifurcation of these issues.
Correct.
And in this situation, because the board was able to and had sufficient development to reach a decision on the claim for service-connected benefits related to PTSD, it did so. And then it sent the generalized anxiety disorder, which it did not have sufficient development, back.
Correct.
And
but may I interject, please, about Tyruz? I'm sorry, you may finish if you think it's important.
No, go ahead, Your Honor. Thank you.
In Tyruz, was there a question about jurisdiction other than the court saying, look, the secretary itself has the ability to separate various theories within a single claim? And I think I don't hear that dispute here. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yes.
So, if that's the case, why, and was, do you see any issue about jurisdiction in Tyruz, similar to the issue that apparently is before the court now?
Tyruz indicated that there has to be a final decision, mm-hmm, which is typically involves a denial of a benefit. In this case, we have a denial of a benefit, which would be the decision of the board to deny the claim for service-connected benefits based upon PTSD.
Right, but didn't the board pick whatever word you want, say, wait a minute, this claim doesn't just include PTSD. This is a claim for generalized mental disorders, and therefore we have to examine that portion of the claim. So why is this not consistent with Tyruz in the sense that, I guess the original question I asked you was there a jurisdictional issue in Tyruz that is the same jurisdictional issue with is apparently what the court is wrestling with here?
I think, if I recall correctly, Tyrus did have a jurisdictional aspect to it, in that it was concerned with whether or not there was a final decision, and because what you had was a denial of a claim for service-connected benefits, a lung disorder on a presumptive basis, but then there was a, and that was a final denial, but you still had a pending claim for benefits for a lung disorder on a direct theory. Mm-hmm. And so the question was, is,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Could the court review both of those mm-hmm. matters? And it answered in the negative. So I think that there was a jurisdictional issue that the court did wrestle with there and answered.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counselor, are you familiar with the Cerullo case, C-E-R-U-L-L-O?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So wouldn't the board and the RO be required to stop working on appellant's claim once an appeal was filed at this level?
Once an appeal is filed at this level, in this particular case, with regards to the claim for PTSD, there was nothing further for the board to act on. With regards to the anxiety disorder, it had been remanded under the order of the court from June 2010. And so that continued to be adjudicated, and the benefits were ultimately granted. The board or the RO was continuing to adjudicate on the merits, however, is a different determination from what the court would be looking at in this case, which would be the propriety of the referral versus, or whether it had the authority to review the referral versus remand.
In your brief, I think you questioned the propriety of modifying a decision of the board and then affirming your own decision. Do you still maintain that position?
The Secretary's position is that although the court certainly has the authority to modify a board decision, it's limited to situations in which it was appropriate, and it's our position that there were more appropriate avenues that the court could have utilized in this case. And yes, because it did effectively create a remand and then affirm that remand, that's not something that is contemplated by the regulatory scheme, which would include 38 CFR 20.1100, which indicates that a remand is not ordinarily reviewable, and also the case law of this court, including Breeden versus Principi.
So I can't make a decision and affirm my own decision on appeal. Is that what you're saying?
No, but I can.
Yeah. you try it.
It wouldn't be a jurisdictional issue, though. You're just pointing out that perhaps it didn't comport completely with your regulations as you see it.
Correct. It's not necessary for the court.
And if the board had addressed only the PTSD and not the rest of it, the court would have jurisdiction to address Clemens, to address whether or not the medical evidence raised an additional issue associated with the symptoms that the appellant had claimed, and the court would be able to remand that matter for the board to remand it for further work by
with the final RO. Yes, with
so
the final.
So it's really not a jurisdictional issue, is it?
As to the
in this case
modification, right. The propriety.
Well, the modification or addressing the referral or addressing the back. We had one claim by the veteran. It included multiple disabilities. The board recognized that. The board failed to recognize that it should have remanded. It referred instead. The court gave them a decision as to part of that claim on appeal. Within that board decision, they addressed an issue associated with the claim, which is a referral. The court exercises jurisdiction over the referral, change it to a remand, and send it back.
Correct.
Thank you.
So in going back to the EJIA aspect of the case, it's our position that it really is nothing left to be acted on in this case other than the motion to dismiss, and we're aware of no reason that it shouldn't be granted in this case. There's no case or controversy that remains, and no issue is in legal dispute between the parties, including prevailing party status. And because all issues have been resolved to the satisfaction of the parties, the secretary would respectfully request that the motion to dismiss be granted and the joint stipulated agreement be incorporated into the order so that the appellant may obtain the award to which he's entitled.
Is there a third alternative to dismiss the claim and not grant the order?
To dismiss
the claim and not grant the stipulated agreement.
Well, our position is that they're entitled to the EJIA award, and while it's not necessary for the court to inquire further into the prevailing party status, it is necessary, we believe, to have an order so that the appellant can obtain the award to which he's entitled. My understanding of the process is that when we submit a request for payment, we normally do so with the court's order.
But to follow up on Judge Lance's question, the court could withdraw mandate, could modify its decision so that issue was not addressed, and therefore there would be no underlying support for the EJIA award. I think that's might be the point it was making.
It could withdraw mandate.
If the criteria for withdrawing mandate existed.
If they existed.
Which might exist if the court were to find it had no jurisdiction.
In this case, there's been no argument by either party that...
But jurisdiction isn't really your... I mean, you have to demonstrate we have it, but at the end of the day, the court determines.
Yes. If there are no further questions, we would just ask that the motion to dismiss be granted and the order incorporated, or the agreement incorporated into an order of the court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'd like to more clearly state this is not an interlocutory appeal. This is a final, adverse decision of the Board of Veterans' Appeals under 7266. And it is not an interlocutory appeal because there is a preclusive effect here. In other words, the referral did trigger a preclusive effect. That preclusive effect is that on the way back down now, Mr. Young is not going to be entitled to the correct docket number, and he is not going to be entitled to the expeditious treatment, the Chief Judge Castle pointed out. As a practical matter, that is precisely what is happening in this case. Mr. Young, I know it's not before the court, but just as a matter of background, Mr. Young is still pursuing what he believes is the correct compensation. He was eventually, after the court modified the decision, awarded a 30% rating for his generalized anxiety disorder. He has currently filed a notice of disagreement with that rating. Had the referral stood under 7266, he would be precluded. It would have a preclusive effect from being able to obtain expeditious treatment and his proper docket number.
Is that the same as res judicata, in your opinion?
As to what issue, Your Honor? Res judicata as
well, any of the ones that you've just presented, I mean. Res judicata would be somebody saying you've already adjudicated this and you don't get two bites at the apple, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I don't know that any of the things that you've outlined would necessarily trigger the doctrine of res judicata. So we go to the Cook decision of the en banc Cook decision of the Federal Circuit, right?
Okay.
And that's our starting point. Principles of finality and res judicata apply to agency decisions that have not been appealed and become final. So, where does that leave us?
I would say that once this case was referred, it was final as to the situation that I outlined. It's a final adverse act. A referral, by its nature, provides no relief. And had he not appealed the referral within the 120 days that he was given to appeal the referral, he would have lost out on his expeditious treatment, and he would have lost out on the correct docket number. Those are two tangible benefits, and again, I would point to the Sandstrom decision, the interest earned, or the fact that he could die while this claim was pending. There would be a preclusive effect had he never appealed the referral. He'd have no other means for redress. on those particular issues.
Well, Counselor.
Unless you came in with a request for mandamus, as Judge Lance previously discussed.
Or could he come in for a motion for the board to reconsider its action? In other words, to say, we made a mistake. It should, in fact, have been a remand, which appears to be pretty clear from the case law. I don't think the issue is here whether or not the determination of referral versus remand was correctly decided by the court in the first instance. One of the issues that I see you presenting is, and I think I heard you correctly, was that the individual would have no other relief. But would the individual not have the administrative relief available to him to seek reconsideration for the board and cite the regulation, which apparently is clear?
He would have that avenue, Your Honor, as, if I'm understanding your question correctly, as would any veteran after any adverse decision by the Board of Veterans Appeals. They can always file, a veteran can always file for reconsideration as an administrative remedy. That, in our opinion, was not the best remedy in this situation. The best remedy was to have the court exercise its jurisdiction, which it did properly, and correctly call it remand. And to Judge Lance's question about mandamus about filing a writ, after it was referred, I don't believe that it would be possible to get that relief. I suppose that it could be tried, but I don't know that, as a practical matter, once it gets referred, the board has chopped out that issue. Under Clemens,
come up and seek it. You may not get it until 10 years goes by or some extensive amount of time.
Yes, Your Honor, and that would be another point. Mandamus would take a lot longer.
Which shows the court would have jurisdiction, or at least it would be addressed in that case. If you did seek reconsideration, the only reason the appellant would seek reconsideration is because there was an adverse decision by the board.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Which is appealable to the court.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that it would
be at least in the context of an otherwise final board decision, which you did have in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. In other words, reconsideration can always be sought for any adverse decision, as it can be sought in this court under 7266, which is precisely what Mr. Young did here. He had an adverse decision against him. He sought relief in this court. This court granted him relief. It changed the position of the parties below, and he's entitled to an Equal Access to Justice Act award. I would further point out that he did obtain the relief sought at this court of appeal at the court. He did file an appeal. He got the relief he sought. He is now in a better position. Again, I know this is not before the court, but it does provide some background. Had the referral stood, he would be in a much, much worse position than he is
is irrelevant, regardless. I mean, what if you'd gotten a remand and they took 2 years to do it, but they happened to refer it and you're in an RO region where they went ahead and processed it? The fact of what you got isn't the legal issue. The legal issue is you're entitled to one under the other.
Yes, Your Honor, I was just merely providing some background. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank both counsel for their briefing and response to the court's questions. I thought it was you responded to all the questions, which we appreciate.
I have one matter.
And one matter from Judge.
I'd like to make a statement here. During the course of the argument, I made a comment directly to Chief Judge Castle that was entirely inappropriate. It's not only inappropriate, it was discourteous. I would, in fact, chastise counsel if one counsel made a comment to the other instead of addressing the court. So I want to make that clear to people, and I publicly apologize to the chief for that. Thank you.
Well, silly how slow I am. I didn't notice it, but anyway, thank you very much. The case will be submitted. We'll come to your counsel.